made possible in part by a grant from RE/MAX Realty Associates, currently handling over 30% of the real estate sales transactions in Champaign County. 352-5700. Nobody sells more real estate than RE/MAX, and they encourage you to join them in supporting public broadcasting. Programs on WILL are made possible by Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design in downtown Champaign, featuring Opals from the Outback, a series of gemstone roundtables to benefit WILL on October 7th, 8th, and 9th. More information is available at 352-2415. Today's programming is made possible by Parkland College Theater, presenting Sherlock's Last Case, a comic thriller centered around a death threat against the master detective by the son of his late nemesis, Professor Moriarty. Performances run from Wednesday, September 29th through Sunday, October 10th. For more information, call 351-2528.
Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton. Our producers are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and Henry Frayne is at the controls. Very glad you're listening this morning. As Americans grapple with another close presidential election, we're also struggling with a number of contested ideas. Many of them are claimed as truths, that we are safer or less safe after invading Iraq, that Swift boat veterans refute or confirm John Kerry's patriotism, or that a document shown on CBS is fake, but the story it tells is true. We hope that somewhere in all the spin, we can recover the signal from the noise. But the noise itself raises an interesting question. If the election has become an exercise in brute force rhetoric, is truth still of any value in American politics? Stepping back from what could be some really fun arguments, the question for this hour of Focus 580 is a philosophical one. What is the nature of truth, and does it matter on its own terms? Our guest for this discussion is Michael Lynch, professor of philosophy at the University of Connecticut, author of several books on the subject of truth, including one we'll draw from today. It is entitled True to Life, Why Truth Matters, recently published by the MIT Press. In the book, Michael Lynch raises the question, why does truth matter when politicians so easily sidestep it and intellectuals scorn it as irrelevant? Our guest raises a defense of truth in the book and makes a claim for truth's value not simply in philosophical terms, but in practical and political affairs we all must face. And we'll talk about that during this hour. Let me also mention our guest, Michael Lynch, will be making a couple of appearances in the Chicago area. So if you're listening up there, you can catch him at these events. He's speaking on Truth, Power, and Democracy in the Chicago area at the College of DuPage on October 11th. That's a week from Monday, 10 a.m. at the College of DuPage. This is part of a series on George Orwell's 1984, and it's sponsored by the Middle East Committee of the College. And also he'll be doing a reading and book signing on the evening of Monday, October 11th at 57th Street Books, 7 p.m. And so you can look for him there as well. And he joins us this morning by telephone. As we talk with Michael Lynch, you are invited into the conversation. Your questions and thoughts on the subject are welcome. All you need to do is pick up the telephone, the number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. Michael Lynch, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
I wanted to ask you, what got you interested in this line of inquiry? You've written at least three books on the subject, The Nature of Truth and Its Defense.
Right. Well, look, I'm a philosopher, and for the last 10 years I've been thinking about what truth is. But I had been for a long time just approaching it in this typical sort of egghead academic way, just thinking about certain puzzles and paradoxes, and those things are very important. But in a sense, I began to realize that as I sort of came down out of the ivory tower, so to speak, that in the wider culture at large, people, and I include myself among them, were really confused, not only about what truth is, but most importantly, or at least more importantly, about its value. And that result, as a result of that confusion, I think people have become increasingly cynical about truth's value. I mean, let me just give you a few examples.
Sure.
I mean, we went into the war in Iraq, for instance, because we were told that there were WMDs. Well, it turns out there weren't. But many people, and it's sometimes, at least I suspect, that people in the administration might be some of those people, don't seem to think that really matters, don't think that it really, the truth of the matter here is what's important. What's important is what we did, or that we achieved stability, or that we increased our power, or we made for, you know, we are making a more just democracy. But it's not the truth of those claims that really was important. In another completely different sort of example, I mean, think of our intellectual culture. Many people in my field, philosophers, have come to embrace a sort of view of truth according to which truth is relative to, let's say, the opinions of those in power. And so people begin to think that, well, philosophers have begun to think that, well, it's really the opinions of those in power, the opinions of the people in the culture that matters, not the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, I think that, you know, this confusion is manifested just by the simple fact that a lot of people confuse the love of truth with the love of dogma. And that, too, is a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about, as you do, the 4 points that you make, these ideas that are very, that are under assault, truth, you know, in a number of its manifestations or ways of looking at it, is a very contested area. And I wanted to begin by discussing the claims you make and then the defenses you raise about those claims. The first of which is that truth is objective.
Right.
And an idea that has indeed been under assault, you know, especially in academia in recent decades.
Absolutely. I think the idea that truth is objective has, in many people's minds, become problematic simply because they've misunderstood what it is. To think that truth is objective is not to think anything particularly fancy-schmancy. It's just to think that, look, I don't know everything, and neither does anyone else. There are some things that we just won't ever know, and there are other things that we think we know, but we don't. I think if you grant that, then you've already granted that, in the important sense, truth is objective. I mean, some of the attacks on the idea of truth being objective in the academy stem from the fact of sort of confusing the idea of objectivity with other ideas that are really bad ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think a lot of people think that, well, if you believe that truth is objective, then you've got to believe there's one truth. That's a mistake. You can believe that in a certain sense that there's more than one true story of the world, at least about some things. But there are certainly some stories that are absolutely mistaken. Another way that people, I think, sort of become confused about the objectivity of truth is that they think that, well, if truth is objective, that must mean that we've got to know what it is. And then they reflect on the fact that, well, they're not quite sure what it is. So they become confused about the idea of truth being objective. But obviously, the fact that truth is objective doesn't mean that we know what it is. And in fact, it means that we have to be open to the possibility that we're always mistaken.
Well, we've just started to scratch the surface of the topic. We already have a caller who's waiting.
Uh-huh.
I'm curious what's on their mind, so let's include them in our conversation.
Okay.
This is a Champagne listener on line number one. Good morning.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, hi. I'm going to take personal offense at some of the words that have already been used here. Egghead, ivory tower, academic, intellectual, fancy.
Right.
I think one of the problems with dealing with truth is that many, I'll use the word, pseudo-intellectuals, that would be people in your field, have hijacked the very complicated ideas of quantum mechanics and modern physics. I'm a theoretical physicist. And basically, those concepts are in actuality not understandable in human conversational terms. And they've taken this and they've used this in the same way that they've used the word of relativity to say, well, there are no values because of relativity. And I think that physics has been hijacked by people to use it to distort what objectivity means, and what basically to get rid of values. And maybe you could discuss that, because I don't feel bad about it, but I feel that people are always coming up to me and asking me, does the fact that we Heisenberg's uncertainty principle mean that we can't know anything?
Right.
And I usually just say, go away.
Right.
Because I can't really explain
it. It's complicated.
What I tell them is that physics, the language of physics is mathematics, And any attempt to use an analogy will fail because these things are not describable in normal English, so to speak. So I'd like you to just talk about that the way physics has been used and chemistry and biology to support these metaphysical and ontological distortions that I see in the academia.
Okay.
Okay.
Great question.
All right. It is a good question. And let me first just start by saying I certainly didn't mean to offend anyone by referring to myself as an egghead or an intellectual. In fact, I think that I'm certainly proud of both of those labels. But to the more important question that you raised, which I think is a very good question, I mean, as you know, I mean, more than anyone, it's science has long been seized upon by people for lots of different reasons, and often not because they understand it particularly well. People like to seize on what they think are the results of science and try to use them for their own ends. And that's true both with, you know, from philosophers to politicians. And you're quite right to warn us about that. And I think that you're also quite right to point out that in some areas of inquiry, specifically on things in physics, but also in chemistry and biology, that it requires a great deal of technical knowledge to grasp the theories involved. And it's important, I think, one thing that you didn't bring up, but I think it's important to sort of point out, is that we need to encourage people to continue to have some familiarity with this technical language to teach science,
yeah.
Because otherwise people will continue to misunderstand the results of your discipline.
Mm-hmm. And this is a great question because, you know, we do like to cross-pollinate things, and especially in the humanities, we want to sound more scientific. So what better
absolutely.
Than to borrow from physics?
Right.
You know?
That's right. That's right. Philosophers are often wishing that they were more like physicists. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people in the academy have, I've sometimes heard it called, physics envy.
Yeah. Well, very good. We have another caller to talk with. Let's include them. Someone in Chicago on line number 4. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Good morning. And I think one thing we need to say is that even in science, one of the biggest problems that we have is that we in the West treat theories and hypotheses as truth and fact, and therefore see other people as not having the truth and not having facts, when in reality we are working from theories. And even though the theories and the hypotheses are working, at least they're still only a worldview, and they are not the truth. And I think that's why we get so much junk science now, because we're treating these things as truth when they are hypotheses and theories.
Well, I think there's some things that I think you and I will agree on, and perhaps some things that we won't. I take it that we'd all agree, I think you're completely right, that it's important to remember that when we're dealing in science or in any sort of inquiry, that we're always dealing with things that are less than certain. Certainty is hard to come by in life. And a lot, you know, you're quite right that in science deals with hypotheses and theories. I think it's also important that I'm not quite sure I agree that that's, you know, not realizing that is the reason that we get a lot of what you term junk science. Because, you know, perhaps I'm not quite sure what you mean by junk science, but I certainly think you're right that we need to remember that just because we think we're right about something doesn't mean that we are. And that means we've got to be open to the possibility that we're mistaken.
Well, I'll use one example of junk science, the idea of race, which through the developments of cell biology, people are now realizing that that is a social
right.
construct. But in fact, people in medicine still use it. I think it's because they would take so much deconstruction that they don't want to bother with it. But at the same time, because they still use it, most people begin to continue to feel that it's a biological fact and not a social construct.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might be one example.
Right, Right. Well, one of the things that I think that is an interesting example, and it's a great example of how just what you were talking about, indeed, that we take certain kinds and categories as given and forget that sometimes new experience, new information, new science, as you were indicating, actually can show that what we thought were useful kinds and categories and concepts turn out to, in fact, be quite misleading. And if we don't remember, I mean, this is, again, an example of, I think, and I see what you're saying now, and I think I agree completely about this. There is a tendency in human beings to, once they become convinced that something is true, to hold on to that truth at all costs. And that, unfortunately, is not a sign that you're caring for the truth. That's a sign that you're caring for dogma, that you're worried about being wrong. And as I said before, caring about objective truth requires being open to the possibility that you're wrong. And I think the example that you gave is an excellent example.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think knowing truth is very rare. I believe in truth, but I think we seldom know it. And that's maybe just not going to be our privilege in life. I mean, sometimes we do, but I think a lot of times we're really not sure what the truth is. And I think that always to recognize when things are theory and not to be, as you said, dogmatic, because that certainly has caused a great many problems, especially when we get into the area of religion where people feel very deeply that they know the truth.
Right.
If you can only hold and understand that you probably will never recognize the truth, and that's why it becomes an area of religion, because you have to go by faith that you have found the truth. But at the same time, there has to be an appreciation that someone else has thought that he or she has found the truth.
I agree with you on that point to an extent. I think that there are, of course, issues where it's going to be very, very difficult, if not impossible, to know what's true. There are other issues, however, where I think you and I would agree, from the mundane, issues to perhaps more important issues, where I think it is possible for people to know what's true. I think what I'm trying to be careful of here is, while on the one hand we have to be open to the fact that we might be wrong, we don't want to also fall into the other trap, which people tend to fall into, which is that they come to appreciate the point that you're making, that, well, it's really difficult to know what's true. We have to be open to the possibility that we could be wrong. And they fall into the trap of thinking that, well, look, I'm never going to know what's true. And
yeah.
So as a result, who cares? Who cares what's true? I mean, this is something I think we're seeing not just in issues about science and philosophy, but we also see it in the wider culture at large.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Right. People are bombarded by all sorts of information from all different sources. And, people will start saying, well, I just don't know. I don't know what's true, so I'm just not even going to try to figure out what's true anymore. That's a mistake, because on lots of things, thinking critically, thinking carefully, keeping your eyes open can lead you to, if not certainty, to a close approximation of what's true.
Thank you. I agree with your last point. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Well, we're getting lots of callers here. Apparently, people are concerned about truth, so that's a good sign, I think.
Is.
Indeed. I will get on to the next caller, but I can't help but ask this question, because just at the top of the hour, as we were lining up the phone call to you to talk, the lead story on the NPR News was a story about Tony Blair admitting, finally, that he was wrong about the intelligence on weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying that publicly. But he then goes on to insist that he was right to send troops to Iraq.
Right.
And it just seems like, whatever you believe about, this larger issue, that there is this phenomenon that, okay, we'll drag our feet, but finally we'll admit that we were wrong about certain things. But in the same breath, we were right about so many other things. And there's this phenomenon that you mentioned, that humans have this need to be right, whether they are or not.
Right. Well, I think the issue, the Blair case, is a really good example of what we're talking about. I mean, I think it's great that he has, as you implied, it is great that he's admitted that he's wrong about some things. I certainly think, however, that we might be a little bit more open to the possibility that we're wrong, especially about that particular issue, than Tony Blair has been. I mean, I think that one thing that is worrying people right now about this is that this whole issue of being open to the possibility of mistake is connected to an issue that we to a value or virtue that we think that politicians should have, which is integrity. And a lot of people think that integrity means always being consistent. That's a mistake. To have integrity means being willing to pursue the truth, just because it is the truth, being willing to stand up for what you believe, your best guess of what is true, and it being open to changing your mind when the facts point in a different direction. And so, I mean, here's a totally different example of where this sort of has manifested itself recently. You know, during the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, ironically named Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, in my opinion, during that issue recently, you know, with the interviews with the people who were part of that organization, one of the things that they said was that, you know, what really got them motivated to participate politically in the way that they did was because they were incensed by John Kerry's testimony before Congress after the Vietnam War. And they were, what's interesting about that is that in some of the interviews, the word integrity got used a lot, that they felt that showed that Kerry had no integrity. I actually think the opposite. I think that if you're willing to, you know, sort of stand up and say, well, look, yeah, I went to this war, yeah, I believed in it, so forth and so on, but I was mistaken, that shows that, to some extent at least, you're open to the possibility of being wrong, and that's part of integrity. And that's the sort of thing that we're looking, I think many people on the left, at least, are looking from Tony Blair and George Bush and John Kerry, actually, hoping that they display the sort of integrity about the war in Iraq.
Well, you also use the case in your book of former Illinois Governor George Ryan,
yes,
who I suppose in some people's minds could not be accused of a high standard of integrity in other areas, but in terms of the death penalty.
Right.
You know, you write about, and I think many people have commented, he was a strong supporter of the death penalty, but then when he became governor, he saw the appalling way it was exercised.
Right. I think he's actually a really interesting example, precisely because of the complexity of his character. And as you say, I'm careful to, when I do talk about him as showing some intellectual integrity, I'm careful to talk about just that particular case, the case of the death penalty. I mean, after all, whether a person as a whole displays integrity through their life, well, that's a difficult issue, and I can't judge because I'm no expert on his entire political life. But it does seem to me that case, when Ryan, whatever you think about the death penalty, whether you think it's justified or not, whether you think he did the right thing or not, it does seem as if the man came to change his mind because he thought that the facts bore him out. He could be mistaken, but you've got to admit it does seem as if he was pursuing the truth and thinking about it critically.
Yeah. We're talking this morning with Michael Lynch. He's professor of philosophy at the University of Connecticut, author of several books, including the one we're discussing this morning, True to Life, Why Truth Matters, published by the MIT Press. We do have a couple of callers waiting patiently. I'll get right to them. If you'd like to join us in the time remaining, we've got about maybe half an hour left. 333-9455. That's around Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Well, next to a listener on a cell phone, line number one. Good morning.
Hi. Very interesting show. I guess I'm in part going to be adding a couple Me Toos, but to the physics professor, I utterly agree. Physics borrowing by people in the humanities is just incredibly dangerous. I've heard so many people say all sorts of crazy stuff, including some physicists, I might add, seem to drift into doing philosophy later in life, from what I've seen. It just kind of ill-reasoned things. Anyway, let's see, another point. Here's a little quote I will toss out from the late Sir Karl Popper, which was, "What is needed today is rather more intellectual modesty." I'm not sure Carl would have been one of those people who actually lived that life, but it's a good statement.
Right.
And then the last little bit I will add, there was a column by retired Colonel David Hackworth, who is he's written a bunch of books.
Sure.
On the Swift Vote Veterans for Truth comment, and one of the things that he pointed out was that basically in most situations like what they were talking about, there isn't a true interpretation of events, because and you'll just never know, because everybody has only little bits of information and there's no really good way of putting it all back together again, particularly as time goes on. People die, people's memories change, et cetera. And so in a sense, maybe there is a truth, but it's one of those things we're just going to have to uncomfortably accept that we probably will never know.
Well, I think, right.
And so that just speaks to the things, as you pointed out, we have to realize there's a lot of things that we just can't know. And, you know.
But the important thing here is that, I have a number of comments. I think a lot of these things that you're saying are very valuable. The important thing, as I was to reiterate, is to remember that just because in some cases it will be very difficult and some perhaps in one sense impossible to know what happened, and cases of the history, of course, are excellent examples of that.
Right.
We shouldn't fall in, I'm not suggesting that you were, but I think it's important to point out, we shouldn't fall into the trap that, well, in that case, you know, it's not important to try to figure out, to try to get closer to the truth. Because even if in some cases we can't know every last detail about something, we might, be able to approximate, as it were, the perfect truth about some particular event.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, I don't mean to say history is impossible, and I don't know. I'm sure that's not what he meant either.
Oh no. I'm just pointing out
that in those kinds of circumstances, there's going to be a lot of dramatically conflicting evidence,
right,
that probably can't ever be sorted out, because if you're on one side of the river and he's on the other side of the river, you don't necessarily know what's going on. And you might think X is going on, but really it's Y.
Right.
But because you just have no way of knowing.
Well, and just to add here, the goal of the recollection may not be the truth anyway. It may be a political goal.
Oh, well, sure, of course. I'm not even going there.
He, yeah.
He was basically saying, let's not even go there. Let's just say, can we find a consistency of events? And the chances are pretty good. The answer is no.
Yeah, I on that particular issue, I'm not so sure. It seems to me like a lot of reporting that has come out recently has the preponderance of the evidence is that that we do know that Carey's version of events, if we're not perfectly sure it's the right one, seem to be substantiated. But, you know, you're right, that's a judgment call, and a lot of these people who are criticizing Carey based on what happened, are no doubt some of them are being very sincere about what they reported. And as you pointed out, at a certain point, of course, it is going to be difficult to know whose interpretations of events is the right one.
Okay. Well, we have another caller waiting on line number 2 in Champaign. They're up next. Good morning.
Hi. I have a couple of questions. One of them, I guess, is more just if you could discuss issues around science, but also maybe having to do with media or power in terms of determining, you know, do we have global warming going on? What are the issues that, you know, prevent us from being sure about knowing the truth about that? Or another issue would be around cultural truths or cultural differences. It seems to be a really marked difference in a lot of Europeans' views of what's going on in the world right now, or about John Kerry or whatever. And I'm wondering if that doesn't have something to do, well, it might have something to do with the educational system, but also widespread exposure to Marxist theories, so their view of colonialism or imperialism or economics may be different. For example, on the issue of healthcare, what kind of assumptions they might make about economics or the role of the government or the role of the individual or the role of the community. So, anyway.
Well, a lot there.
A lot there.
Sorry.
That's
okay. I probably won't be able to address all of that. But I think one of the, just picking up on one thing that you said and generalizing it a bit, William Blake has this remark that, you know, it's might be impossible to throw off the mind-made manacles of culture. And to a certain respect, of course, he's right about this. And this is illustrated by the what you pointed out, that people around the world, and certainly Europeans' view on the presidential election is a good example of that, look at events through the eyes of their culture. And we do, too. We look at our opinions, of course, are fashioned and affected by all sorts of things that we don't even have much control over.
Yeah.
That fact has led a lot of folks to believe that, well, at the end of the day, there really isn't such a thing as objective truth. They're just competing truths. And one of the things, I think that's a reasonable point of view. I think that, you know, the philosophers who've made that sort of view, made that sort of claim, are making an important point. I don't agree, because I think it, in part, that just because, one of the reasons I don't agree is just because it's the case that we see the world through different lenses doesn't mean that we can't all focus on the same object. We see it through different perspectives, but that doesn't mean that those perspectives are always incommensurable. And let's hope that might be the case in some of the situations that you, or the examples that you mentioned. I certainly hope that the type of perspective that the Europeans are bringing is the sort of perspective that at some point some Americans, I think some Americans are listening to the sorts of concerns that they have about our present government's actions in the world and their motivations. So I think that, you know, there is, in a sense, hope that despite the fact that we see the world through different cultural lenses, that we can reconcile some of these perspectives.
Well, we're getting lots of calls, and I want to include as many people as we can, but I also want to make sure to cover some of the basic concepts that you describe in the book. And so before going to the next caller, I want to just raise this one point that I think is really interesting that you make, the notion that truth is good. And basically, another way of saying it is good to believe what is true. It's
right.
Something that we value, and that this is sort of an intrinsic, you know, human element about how we perceive the world. And, you know, there's a really interesting example you raise about that. And it's sort of illustrated in movies like The Matrix, when
right.
Someone's given the option, take one pill and you will never know what reality is, but you will be happy and you will, you know, exist in this fantasy
right.
And you'll be happy. But if you take this other pill, then you will know the truth, but the truth is really going to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the hero, of course, takes the truth pill.
Right.
And I think in many ways, all of us would do that, or maybe most of us.
Right. Most of us.
Yeah.
Right. I think that is an important point, and it reveals that something, as you said, that's incredibly fundamental in our thinking, which is that we do, at the end of the day, value truth for more than its consequences. And that little thought experiment that you quite rightly point out is found in movies like The Matrix, reveals that in a certain sense. Now, of course, it's true that, you know, some people, I mean, depending on the circumstances mm-hmm. you're in, I mean, if you're in a lot of pain and your life is really bad, it might not sound too bad to opt for the fantasy world,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Step into the machine. Of course, even for that person, if you gave them the option between just having the fantasy of their troubles being fixed and having them really being fixed, I think clearly people would opt for actuality rather than just complete fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, revealing that there's something about believing the truth just for its own sake that's important to us as human beings. And it's something that we got to remember. It's something that it seems to me that a lot of us have forgotten.
We've got several callers waiting. Let's go on next to an Urbana listener. Line number one, good morning.
Mr. Lynch.
Yes, hello.
Do you believe in facts that you can discover the truth by discovering the facts and appealing to them? And what is implied in calling something a fact other than you have my word for it?
Right. Okay. Yeah, I think that you can learn about all sorts of things by searching for and discovering and reflecting on the facts. I can, for instance, realize that there's coffee in this mug that I'm holding because I look into the mug and I see it's a fact that there's coffee in the mug. Now, that's a mundane example. And, of course, in lots of things, political things, and legal things, and moral issues, and religious issues, it's much harder, as we've been talking about, to know what the facts are. Now, to your second question as to what is a fact, well, I think, you know, the meaning of the word fact, as I understand it, is not that complicated. The meaning of the word fact, to talk about a fact, is to talk about something that's the case, a way the world is. It's difficult. The difficult question, of course, is how you figure out what the facts are. And that, of course, is going to depend on what sorts of facts you're interested in and what sorts of issues you're concerned with.
Yeah. Well, the theory of the common man seems to be a kind of naive realism that truth is what corresponds to the facts. Do you see any problems with the correspondence theory?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think the idea that truth is correspondence with the facts all by itself is a perfectly okay notion. In a sense, it's a sort of truism, a platitude. Philosophically speaking, I think the trouble with that theory, insofar as there is trouble with it, comes to trying to understand what correspondence is in detail, that is, in technical philosophical detail, and understanding what the facts are in more than the truistic sense that I defined.
Yeah.
Now, as a matter of fact, I'm inclined to think, nowadays anyway, that in some domains of our thought, that is, when we're thinking about things like coffee cups and trees and mountains and so forth, the middle-sized dry goods of our everyday life, some sort of version of the correspondence theory of truth, and again, now we're talking about philosophical theories of what truth is, some version of that theory could end up being right. Now, in other domains, I think it's possible that there are other sorts of theories of truth that people have developed, such as certain versions of the coherence theory, that might be more appropriate.
Yeah. Does your book deal with the correspondence, coherence, and pragmatic theories?
Yes, it does. A number of my books do, but in this book, one of the things that I think falls out of examining that truth is a value, I mean, when you think about truth being a value, one of the things that I think falls out of that, and it just sort of is developed in the book, is that truth, like a lot of values, is something that comes in more than one form. And by that, I don't mean anything about truth being relative or anything like that. I just mean that truth can be, as I put it, multiply realized. It's the sort of property that a belief has that can manifest a different form, to put it somewhat loosely, in different domains. So that in morality and ethics, what truth metaphysically amounts to might be quite different than what it is in physics.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Very happy. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. And I actually followed that. That was great.
Great. Me too. Finally.
We have several callers left and just about 13, 14 minutes left with our guests. Let me reintroduce real quickly Michael Lynch, professor of philosophy at the University of Connecticut, author of a number of books, including the one we're discussing, True to Life, Why Truth Matters, published by the MIT Press. He'll be appearing in Chicago a couple of events next week, Monday, October 11th at 10 a.m., part of a series on George Orwell's 1984 at the College of DuPage, I should say, 10 a.m. on Monday, the 11th of October, College of DuPage. He'll be speaking there. Also that evening at 7 p.m., speaking at the 57th Street Books on 1301 East 57th Street in Chicago. So if you're up there, you can attend those. And meanwhile, we'll go on and talk with some more callers. Next up, someone in Bloomington, Indiana, line number four. Good morning.
Hi, Professor Lynch. Yes. You're a philosopher and not a lawyer, but may I comment about determining truth from personal testimony, such as the testimony of John Kerry versus the testimony of the Swift boat veterans?
Sure.
We have very well developed criteria for determining the accuracy of personal testimony, because the legal profession depends largely on personal testimony.
Uh-huh.
And some of the criteria. Just a matter of judgment. An eyewitness testimony is the very best testimony. If you have a number of eyewitnesses, such as the Swift boat guys, they're better than just one eyewitness. If you have eyewitnesses that were in a good position to observe the events and be accurate, that makes them even better witnesses. And then also, do they have a personal interest in the outcome of their testimony? If they're disinterested, that is good. If they're testifying against their own interest, in favor of their opposition, that's the best testimony of all. And these Swift boat guys, they went to a whole lot of trouble to testify against John Kerry, and apparently, I mean, they raised a whole lot of money and they put themselves to a whole lot of trouble. Those people testifying in favor of John Kerry are interested in the outcome of the they want to get him elected.
Well, you know, I think we take your point, and you know, certainly we've talked about that as an example of the kind of conundrum we have with the truth. And I'm not sure, you know, based on what you said, that we can really take it much further. But I'll leave it up to the guest to, you know, answer if you would like to do that.
I think just a short comment. Certainly, you're right. Eyewitness testimony is an important way of that we use in the law and also in science and all sorts of things for helping us detect what's true. And of course, on this issue, as you know, there's, as we were talking about, a lot of disagreement about who was where, when, and what their motivations are. And in a certain sense, I suppose we can agree that that's the case, and also agree that you're right. Of course, eyewitness testimony is important.
Okay. We'll go next to a listener in Mahomet on line number three. Good morning.
Hi. I called at the very beginning of the show.
You're right.
I wanted to ask you a question. Us eggheads like have an interest in the truth in a way for its own sake, but that's something in the field of science. We have a question of moral truth, and the question is this: if one knows something is true, what does that require of a person?
Mm.
Does it require them to act on that truth?
Excellent question.
In physics, the law of gravity, whatever that might mean, tells you don't jump out of a window unless you're intending to injure yourself. But if you believe in there are certain moral imperatives. Most religion would tell you the reason you do this is that you'll be punished if you don't, usually in the afterlife. But what if you just accept that man has evolved and has certain moral instincts, and a sociopath comes along and says, "I don't care."
Let me just take this first question you raised, which I think is a really, really important question. Okay, suppose we have the truth about something. Does that, about some issue, does that always mean that we need to, continue pursuing the truth about some issue if we haven't yet got the complete truth? And B, does it mean that we should be always with some truth sharing those truths? The answer actually is no. And I think that, you know, just to show, give you some examples about why this is the case. But before, okay, so here are some examples. I mean, one there's in World War II, for instance, certain Nazi scientists pursued the truth of, in a certain respect, quite vigorously about how, whether, you know, about, let's say, in one case, how long people, human beings, could survive in frigid water. And they pursued this by taking Jews and throwing them into frigid water and seeing how long it took them to die. Now, in that case, pursuing the truth about this topic was barbaric in the way that it was pursued. Yeah, it is actually, would be nice to know some more information about how to survive in frigid water, but not at the cost of innocent people's lives, as you would, of course, agree. So sometimes moral considerations, and often frequently moral considerations, should be weighed against our desire to know certain truths. I mean, we think that the Nazi scientists were barbaric, wrong, absolutely wicked, because they didn't take moral considerations into and didn't hold them up against their supposed alleged desire to know the truth. And so that's one sort of example where moral considerations actually are extremely important. But also, of course, in more mundane cases, about when you're talking about speaking the truth, I mean, obviously, sometimes we all will refrain from speaking the truth about certain issues, not just necessarily for moral reasons. I mean, somebody asks you, how do I look? And you might, you know, refrain from saying what you actually think. And that might be, in certain cases, entirely permissible. What this shows is not that truth isn't of value, but like other values, it's a prima facie value. It's a value that can be overridden by other values.
Yeah. But that's not to say that when it comes to something really important, if you have an objective that if you tell the truth you will not meet, that you simply lie about it.
Right. Absolutely, it's not to say that. I think that, you know, obviously, lots of folks err the other way, where they think that, well, okay, this accomplishing this goal, political or otherwise, is extremely important. And even though I know that I'm only going to accomplish this goal if I tell some falsehoods, I go ahead and do that anyway. That's completely wrong. Nonetheless, as I was saying,
yeah,
truth is a value, but it's not the only value.
Okay.
It's worthy of respect, but not worship, as it were.
Our lines are full. Let's go on and talk to another caller, someone in Chicago on line number two. Good morning.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I know you well enough to tell you the truth. That's an expression.
Right.
Yeah, well, it seems as though the administration, the newspapers, those are controlled by the singular media moguls and so forth, feel that we can't handle the truth, and denying us a full perspective on all sides of a question, and answers that people could come forth more in the way of answers, you know. And so, actually, you would think that the Americans or other people in the part of the world where the censorship and other things are still necessary for controlling the public, as though truth is something to be feared.
Right.
And just thought I'd throw that in.
Okay.
Well, I you know, there is this question sometimes that people get the impression that the media thinks that we can't handle the truth. And certainly it does seem as if the media aside, oftentimes one gets the feeling that when you're living in day-to-day life that you're not getting the whole truth and that people are protecting you, they think, for your interests. And that's unfortunate. I think that, in fact, it's extremely important for the media to try to present all sides of a particular issue. I think this, you know, the Swift Boat veterans case is actually an interesting case for that, because at first it seemed like there wasn't much reporting going on all sides of the issue about that particular set of allegations. Then the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times dug into the facts of the matter or what they thought were the facts of the matter and try to substantiate various claims. That actually is an example of, I think, the sort of reporting that needs to be done and hopefully will continue to be done as the election continues to unfold.
Okay. We'll go next to an Urbana listener, line number one. Good morning. Hello? Is there a caller there?
Hello?
Yes, that's you.
Oh, just in the matter of the Swift votes, the caller raised the question of disinterest. Well, the Swift vote, the founders of that group, were closely associated to the Bushes. Several of the people who reported having seen the incidents, in fact, all of them were more than a quarter mile away. Some were in Vietnam at the time the incidents occurred, but not present at the incidents. And others either were present in Vietnam before or after, but not at the time.
Yeah.
While the Kerry version is backed up with the Navy documentation.
Yeah. We take your point. And again, I don't want to spend all the time talking about this particular story, although it's an illustration of, I think, the issue that we're trying to talk about during this hour. Again, competing values here. The truth is one, but also what a political objective is another value of someone who is engaged in this.
This is a diversion in that we have more important issues to argue about the truth of.
Yeah.
Well, thank you anyway.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We have literally about 2 minutes left, and I want to squeeze in one last caller, someone on line number four in Indiana. We'll try to be quick, please. Hello?
Hello.
Is caller there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I thought this whole thing about Kerry and the boat had been laid to rest by the editor of the Chicago Tribune when he published his answer to the situation on the front page.
Yeah.
There were three boats there at that time, and one of the captains is dead, and the two remaining people are Kerry and this fellow who's an editor at the Chicago Tribune, and he
yeah.
laid it out pretty straightly that Kerry deserved his stars and the Purple Hearts and all that stuff.
I still find it
incredible. I mean, the people on the right like that, they don't have the slightest idea what the truth is.
Well, I think, of course, I agree with you on this particular issue, but I think, as Jack pointed out, most important thing I think to take away from this conversation is that whatever your view on the Swift Boats incident or any other pressing issue in so-called truth wars that are going on right now, the important thing to remember is that you've got to try to look past your own through your political lens and pursue the truth for the truth's sake. And that's a value that I think that we need to remember the importance of, and we need to in a sense, as Wittgenstein said, assemble reminders for ourselves. Remember what's important in life. And one of those things that is important is, of course, pursuing the truth.
Well, I'd like to continue talking about the truth, but the truth is we're out of time, so we'll have to stop there.
Right.
I will suggest to folks that if you'd like to read more, it's a great read, not heavy lifting at all. The book is True to Life, Why Truth Matters. The author is our guest, Michael Lynch. Professor Lynch, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for this hour, Focus 580. Time for some news and a market update.
Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Christie Clinic, with offices in